Hi, this is Paul Warne, and you're listening to the Rams Review Podcast.
This is the Rams Review Podcast. Discussions, insights, interviews, and analysis. All passion, all Derby County. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Rams Review Podcast with your host, Jason. And it's just the two of us today, giving up some of his bank holiday Sunday to record this, is Chris Holt. Chris, thanks for joining me, mate.
That's all right, Jason. It prevents me from eating more Easter eggs, and I've already had far too many already.
Yeah, I'm into my second one. But no more for the time being. But as we mentioned on the last pod, it was if the result went right on Friday against Blackpool, which it clearly did because that's why we're recording, we'd get one out for Portsmouth. We're going to talk Blackpool, cover that game. A small chat between ourselves about Portsmouth because, Chris, you joined on with, and we've already done a pre-recorded preview with Portsmouth before the Blackpool game, in fact, which will be tacked on to this episode of the podcast. So appreciate your help out with that one. And we'll start with Blackpool. We'll go on to Portsmouth in a little bit more detail later on. And we've just briefly been chatting between ourselves before we press record. And it's for me, a very similar feeling to 14 days ago, like you've just sort of alluded to. A similar sort of game for me, Chris. Okay, not exactly the same sort of opposition, but, for anybody that didn't know, Blackpool are still flirting in and around the playoffs. They have beaten Portsmouth this season. They have beaten Bolton, and not just beaten them, they've battered them. I think they beat Portsmouth in their own backyard about 3-0 or 4-0 a couple of months ago. So this wasn't a team that was ever going to just roll over. One player that clearly was missing, and I was in the Wetherspoons before the game, and I was talking to a couple of Blackpool fans, and they basically said the exact same thing. They were terrified about playing us on Friday. And I said, well, to be honest, I'm not quite sure what you've got to be too worried about. If you've actually watched any of our games, we're picking up results, but there is a way to play against Derby that normally we'll get something out of it. And basically they turned around and said, well, without Jordan Rhodes, we're awful. We can't score. And I have to say, I think that was apparent on Friday, Chris. You know, Blackpool, I think that's one of the main teams that have come to Pride Park and dominated the ball like they did, but without really doing anything with it. I mean, just really absolutely nothing from quality forward play. And the one or two chances that I think Blackpool did have were the downfall of a bit of switching off from Derby's defence again, which, you know, we've said again a couple of times this so far over the last couple of weeks. Blackpool had the chances to score, but yeah, terrible finishing. In what was a bit of just a grinding. It's that time of the season now, isn't it? They've got to get through it, as we've said so many times on the pod over the last couple of weeks. Derby've just got to get through them, and that's about what they're doing at the moment.
No, you're spot on, Jason, and you're quite right to highlight that Jordan Rhodes wasn't playing. And I think for a lot of podcasts that I've listened to, previewing and also post-summarising the game, I think he was a big miss for Blackpool. I think he's one of those players that's so important. You can sort of compare it to the likes of, say, Harry Kane at Bayern Munich, where you take that piece off the chessboard and they are very, very limited up top. I actually thought that they dominated the midfield, like you said, without actually creating. They sort of, the final third, eluded their hard endeavour in the middle of the park. And we'll come to individual players. But I actually thought that Dembele had the better of Ibuwe Adams in the first half. And I know that Ibuwe scored a good goal and got man of the match for the overall 90 minutes he played, but I actually thought that Dembele was the better of the two and was winning the battle. So I don't want to see the Lord Mayor's parade already, and I just fear that we just have to take the win and go forward and reassess for a completely different animal that's coming up on Tuesday. Because I'd really think that when we went into the Northampton game, Jason, after Bolton, there was a complacency in the warm-up against Northampton, which was for all to see, and look what happened. I think against Blackpool, that concentration level was back. I thought the warm-up was excellent. And we spoke about square pegs and square holes, didn't we, Jason, at the last podcast? And he did exactly what we said he should do. He played a 4-4-2 with predominantly everybody in the position that suits them. I don't think there's anyone that was played out of turn, in my opinion. And ultimately, you get that right, and you know, half the job is done. You then ask for, as you quite rightly said, regarding the Northampton pod, you need to get at least 7 or 8 players that are going to be at 7 out of 10. And I think we're just about to squoze that. But you are right. Without their talisman up front, Blackpool were deeply restricted. So let's take the win and move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we've seen it with our own team over the last few weeks. We lost James Collins. We look lackluster in a couple of games. We look bereft of ideas going forward. When you do heavily rely on somebody who can score that amount of goals in a team, I mean, we've seen it over the years when Chris Martin's been out injured and players like that over the years. When you do solely focus on one goal scorer, unfortunately, some teams have only, you know, got one. And obviously, we've been in that sort of position where we've only really ever had one. No disrespect to Washington on Friday. He put himself about, but he's not a, for me, he's not a promotion leading striker. He just isn't. He's got other things about him. He was unlucky with the chance that he had. It's good goalkeeping, really. But, you know, it's chances like that when you're not getting a lot of change up front. And he didn't really. He didn't get a lot of chances up front, Washington. And to be honest, I know they're different types of players, but I think James Collins had more of an impact on the game in 15-20 minutes than Wash did all game. But he obviously, we'll talk about James Collins making his return in a moment. But as I say, lots of parallels. And like the Northampton game, as you've just said, we said there's too many off performances. You look at yesterday, I mean, Wildsmith, I think he's had to do two things, did them both comfortably. Nelson's on getting in front of things. Cash was getting in front of things. He didn't have the greatest game against Northampton. And then as Adams, I would agree, I'm not sure he was fantastic. His goal obviously propels his performance and probably why he's given the man of the match. But he looked, he was there, and he made amends for that miss against Northampton, which, you know, when you listen to his post-match as well after the game, obviously he's still very much in Ramadan and things like that. You know, it's, I don't think I could, I can't go a normal day without eating and drinking, let alone playing 90 minutes of professional football. So I'll take my hat off to him. And then you've got Mendes drifted in and out of the game for me, but he did do some good things. I thought that was the best game of Blackett Taylor's career at Derby so far, without being spectacular, but he was an out ball. There was definitely something to him. That little bit of confidence is obviously hopefully coming in. And yeah, there was enough Derby players on the right side of that 7 out of 10. And as I say, yeah, if Blackpool had a striker who could put the ball in the back of the net, maybe it would have been a bit of a different game. But it's about getting the 3 points, as you're saying. We've just got to move on now to, especially now, I think, with Bolton's draw. We said it last week, Pompey's a bit of a free hit. I think it's a bit more of a free hit now. You know, you can afford, after Bolton dropping points, and they look, I was watching Ian Evatt's press conference as well. They're looking, I think, as you've predicted, Chris, they're looking a little bit, they're looking a little bit worried at the moment, that then, especially then, you know, after the, what, 2 out of the last 5, they've got Peterborough and Portsmouth to come. So, you know, maybe it won't all be Derby's requirements of picking up results as to other teams around dropping them, as we have mentioned on the podcast. But the point that you said about, obviously, after the reaction of Bolton, it was a big win. And I said at the time, it was a big win. I've got no problem with the way that the team celebrated it at the end, as long as you back it up in the next result, which we well know they didn't do against Northampton. They've then come out and, I'd say, performed. We weren't blistering, but we did enough to win. And then you see the celebrations again, which I'm all for, again, but you've then got to back it up. And, you know, going to Sixfields, going to Fratton Park, are two very different kettles of fish. Obviously, we were expected to go to Northampton and probably get something. I'm not sure there's too many Derby fans that are expecting us to go to Fratton Park and pick anything up. But what I would say, Chris, and I know you've spoken about this in the chat, which you will hear later on, going to Portsmouth is going to be a very different game, and actually one that potentially suits Derby a little bit more than probably going to a Northampton. So, I mean, if Derby can come out of Fratton Park with anything, then it takes the pressure off again. But I don't know. There seems to be something a little bit this season, certainly towards the back end, when the chips have been down and Derby have had to turn up and make a performance like they did against Bolton, like they've had to against Blackpool because of the poor result against Northampton. They have managed to turn up and put the result in, even though they've been at home, which obviously bodes well for Leighton Orient and the last game, Carlisle, if it goes that far. Complacency, it's a key word coming in. You hear Paul Warne say it, Ebo Adams said it in his post-match. So you've got to think this is the conversation in the dressing room. Derby haven't given up on top spot. So if that's the case, Tuesday night, they should be fully focused and rearing to go. Of course, we know there were a few injury doubts for Friday. We saw some perform and get more minutes than probably expected. But then all you've got is we've got a day's grace on everybody else, because obviously Sky wanted to show what League One football is really like against the two top hitters. But, you know, don't want to cover too much of Portsmouth because we'll go into it in a bit, but it's they've got to back themselves up again, haven't they? They've now got to go to Portsmouth, and I just don't know if taking, and this is going to sound bizarre, but if you win it, then, you know, you're flying. But if you take a bit of a pasting on Tuesday night, which can happen, you know, Portsmouth, I think they did well to get a 3-1 on Friday against Wickham. That's a good result. Anybody going to Wickham's a good result. But it's about backing it up. But again, with the same sort of the celebrations coming, there's that arrogance. We've mentioned about it, Chris. We mentioned about Barnsley doing it, and look how Barnsley have gone. And then, like we said, against Bolton for Derby, and then we turn out that Northampton. It's pointless trying to be that arrogant and thinking, well, we've picked up another 3 points. And don't get me wrong, the facts are there. The points are there. We are six clear. Yes, there's a game in hand. Superior goal difference. So that means we've got to lose at least two, if not three, out of five, which, you know, chances are we're not going to do. But I'm not so sure I'm so keen, like yourself, with the arrogance. If we were blowing teams away, I could fully accept it. We're not blowing teams away. We're doing what we're having to do to get points, and I get that. But there's a fine line between confidence and arrogance, isn't there? And it'd be interesting to see how Tuesday goes, to see which side of the line this week, Derby Forlham, because I think that seems to be changing.
I think that's a really good summary, Jason, to be honest. Looking at Bolton, I think their game in hand, if I'm pretty sure, is Shrewsbury at home on the 16th. And you would pretty much, even in the form we're on now, I don't see anything else other than a Bolton win for that. So I think my mindset is that Derby are three clear. I understand why they did the bounce at the end. And people probably listen to this are thinking, oh, here we go. Holt is being negative again. I'm not, but I think there's a time and a place for the bounce. And Paul Warne always said that he would join in and push forward for that once there was almost a guaranteed promotion, and everyone and can relax. I really think that Blackpool were the better team in general. If you look at the overall complexity of the match, we've touched upon that their firepower was lacking somewhat, but I thought their midfield was excellent. And, you know, Norburn and Carey, there's certain players in that Blackpool team I would take at heartbeat, to be honest, and add to our squad next year. And I'm pretty sure that Paul Warne will be looking at opposition that they're up against in the upper echelons of League One at potential targets for next season. And there were certainly two or three players there that were Dembele I liked. But there was a structure to the performance on Friday, which is there was something clearly lacking at Northampton, and complacency, I think, was the big factor. I really think the game on Tuesday could be a really big say in the title. I do believe that Portsmouth's last three games are horrendous. I think they've got a really bad run in, and I think they're going to try and get their league title won in the next two games. I think if they win back-to-back, beat us, and then take the victory after that, I think they're pretty much a guaranteed certainty to win the title. I think mathematically it may still be possible that someone can catch them, but I would doubt that anyone will. I personally think that the 4-4-2 worked. It just concerns me. You mentioned the fact that the back four did switch off in certain elements. They did give the ball away quite easily. And again, I'm listening to other podcasts before we came on air, and they're raving about Nelson's and Cashin's performance. But they did some incredible blocks towards the end that kept us out. But actually, there was still a little bit of naivety playing in the four. Now, I know they haven't played the back four for a while, and it was a basically new back four, wasn't it? I don't think them as a four have played together this season. If I'm wrong, I apologise, but I can't remember a game where they were together, and also with Smith in front of them, and I can't remember that at any time. That so it was put together based on what he had, and I like that. That's the one thing I will say about Paul Warne, and I'm being positive about him, and I can't believe I'm saying that about Paul, but he did do the right thing. He didn't tinker with the 3-5-2 based on what he prefers. He went to what needed to be done. But Portsmouth are a far better entity in front of goal than Blackpool. And I think if we had that performance at Fratton Park, which I don't think we will, and we'll come on to that, as you said, we won't get the same result. So I think there will be another 15-20% needed from certain players. The question is, Jason, have those certain players got 15-20% left in their legs, additional to what they've already given?
Yeah, I think one of the things I was going to mention about Friday was didn't really notice it until half time. We had that downpour at half time. And then the pitch. I mean, I feel sorry for the women's game that's going on as we speak right now, because the Pride Park pitch after half time, it wasn't baseball ground esque, but for a ground over the years that's always had a pretty slick playing surface, the pitch for me was awful. It looked absolutely awful. A bit of rain. Okay, it was a significant downpour, but it was only 10 minutes. And there was water all over it. It seemed to cut up really badly. And that obviously does interfere with a style of play. It will change things. But what I will say to that, Blackpool, in that second half, Chris, they got the ball down. They knocked it about. They tried to get Derby to come out. They were resolute in what they were doing. They were structured. And they couldn't hurt Derby. Even, you know, we've had it many, many times where we've watched Derby over the years knock it around a back line and then sort of just not know what to do with it and recycle it and keep going. And that is sort of what that second half felt like. The one worry that I had, and I know we were defending a 1-0 lead, I thought we invited a bit too much on Now, don't get me wrong. I know we've probably got one of the better performing goalkeepers in the division this year. We've got one of the best performing back lines in the division this year. But I'm still not overly confident with this, letting the opposition have the ball and come at us and then hoping to hit, you know, on the break, which means the likes of Mendes, Lang, Blackett, Taylor, as it was, Wash before Collins come on, you know, we're looking at breaking. That's putting an onus on a couple of players that haven't played a lot of football or have played probably too much football over the last few weeks. It was, we're obviously, if we don't have Mendes Lang for the last five, that could cost Derby a couple of points quite comfortably. I don't know if the way we played in the second half was the right way to play or not, to be honest. We just seemed to give up the press a little bit. We didn't quite play the same way with the same intensity. And as I say, I just don't know if that's got something to do with the pitch a little bit, because it definitely bogged up in places. And as I say, against a team like Portsmouth on Tuesday, if we were to allow them to play with the quality that they've got, Derby are going to get punished, because we know there is a mistake in them as well. We know the back line's not rock solid. It's solid, but it's not rock solid. So I don't know, maybe horses for courses, he changes the way that we play on Tuesday and has a right good go at them. Because as I say, a draw probably doesn't suit either teams, I imagine. Like you say, I think Portsmouth are going to want it to be done and dusted. As I say, I've got a feeling we can take a hit against Portsmouth and still be okay. But then, of course, we've not. It's, what, 8 days until the next game, because obviously we don't play at the weekend because of the trophy final. So Derby may as well, they may as well have a go at Portsmouth, hadn't they, and see what they can do. So it's probably another, for the third game in 3 weeks, it's a completely different game, completely different complexion, and a different way to win. And one thing that I think I've been pleased with over this season, whilst it's not been pretty at times, and I don't want to drag up old stories, but obviously certain individuals have been criticised. I think one thing that Derby have managed to do this year, a lot better than what they did last year under Paul Warne, is win in different ways. And I think we've seen that certainly at Pride Park over the last couple of weeks. Okay, the Northampton one was a bit of a disappointment, but you know, we have to go into Tuesday now with as much confidence as we can. But as with the caveat of, if you go there, roll over and get your tummies tickled, then, as we said a couple of weeks ago, there's unnecessary criticism. The criticism is open then from the fan base to start questioning things yet again. And we have the same conversation that we had 2-3 weeks ago on the pod, Chris, about Derby's consistency, Derby's everything, this, that and the other. And as I say, I don't think it's at that stage of the season where we really want to be having those those conversations. And the celebrations, just a point I want to mention about that as well. The celebrations, I mean, there was a fair few of the players hanging around the south stand, and I think it was Mendes Lang as the captain who was calling the other players over to get involved with that. The atmosphere has definitely been different at Pride Park over the last couple of games. There's been a bit more intensity from the fan base, and maybe that's something that they've been instructed to do to keep the fans on side. You know, to try and keep the good times rolling, Chris. But again, it does boil back to what you said. It's all well and good bouncing around Friday at 5 o'clock, but if at, what, 9:45 on Tuesday night, if we've been thumped 3-0, then it's a different complexion again.
Yeah, I think you're spot on about the last comment about the incentives to get the fans there, because as an entertainment factor, the football isn't going to sell the tickets purely on the product. I think the fact that we're in second place is, and we are a football community, gets 30,000 fans through there, and they're magnificent. And we've said this numerous times. We do have the best fans We're biased, of course, because we're part of that bunch, but we do have the best fans, certainly in the Midlands, certainly in this league. I just personally would have liked to see them have a clap, get down the tunnel, get in the shower, reflect on the result, go home, rest, and go. Now, if there is a confidence, there's a difference between confidence and arrogance, and I just hope that when we go into the Tuesday game at Portsmouth, Portsmouth will have a good idea of what Derby will now bring to the table. I don't think Derby can bring any more surprises. I think the only surprise that they may bring is whether they rest Mendes Lange or not, and whether he's going to be potent enough and fit enough to actually compete against a very strong Portsmouth defence. As people will listen to on the recording that I did with the preview with the Pompey podcast, they are very, very strong at the back, and they're very reliant on certain players. And they, although they do say that their main weakness is one of their fullbacks who's not particularly had a good season this year, and they tend to fluff or give away a lot of chances trying to defend a long diagonal, which, funny enough, I think Cashin has got that in his locker. We'll come to the Portsmouth game next, and I'll let you obviously lead us in. But yeah, I'm not a fan of the bounce this early. I think I would have took them off. The fans will be back now. The fans will have 30,000 from now to end of the season. In fact, irrelevant who we play. I just hope that the coaching team remind the players the lack of performance against Northampton. Because let's be honest, if we would have won that game now, we'd be talking about being 6 points clear, even with the game. Well, we'd be 10 points clear, potentially nine, sorry. And even with games in hand, we'd have had the buffer of the goal difference as well, Jason. And with five games to go with a three-game buffer, I would have certainly put a pretty confident bet down that we get through to the top two. The goal difference, I still think, is going to play a part.
Yeah, you're right. That extra three, I mean, we are still almost talking about it as a title decider, but it would very much have been a very interesting title match on Tuesday night if Derby had got those points, because obviously Portsmouth have still got a game in hand on Derby, so they can afford a slip-up. I think it was, to round it off, and we haven't even talked about the goal quite briefly. Obviously, a great recycle of the ball, a nice bit of pressure from Derby. And I must admit, as soon as that ball come out, I thought he's having a go at this. He's threatened it in games before. He's been a little bit off target, or he's had blocks. Obviously, that glaring miss against Northampton. He didn't miss that one, Chris. Outside of the boot, a goal, you know, deserved of 3 points. And we've said it before, if you actually look at the rest of the game, there wasn't a great deal in it. There wasn't chances galore by either sides. Didn't particularly pepper their goal. And it's moments like that can win you those 3 points if you don't score from a set piece. It's finishes like that are gonna win you games. And I've got no problems with Adams getting that as a hopefully a bit more of a confidence booster. I think he's playing with confidence anyway, because he has been quite a key player for Derby since his arrival. So we take it, and you know we have to be happy with the 3 points, especially the fact that Bolton dropped points as well, which we all, I think, kind of hoped in the back that going to Stevenage, that was never going to be an easy game, and they found that out. So that's of benefit. And as I say, the momentum is, the pendulum has swung back in Derby's favour a little bit. I like the fact that we reacted. That is one thing most of the time this season that we have done. We've got a reaction when we've needed one. And before we do move into that Portsmouth conversation, Chris, the question is, are we, this is going to divide opinions, are we now seeing what David Clough saw in bringing Paul Warne in about he can get teams out of this division? Is there something that you can see? Is it maybe we don't even see it now, and then we look back once it's achieved, fingers crossed, and go, yeah, there's a reason why he brought him in. He might not be everybody's cup of tea. He might not play the type of football that Derby are used to. And I think that's still a thing that sticks with fans. It's not the way that Derby have played over the last 10 years. So it is hard to accept a different level of football. But then you've got to look at what's gone on, certainly in the last 3 years. And you can't say that Derby were going to play the same type of football that they were 6, 7 years ago, because they're not in the same division, they're not at the same heights, and they've not got the same quality. So maybe, just maybe, and I'm sure, as I say, we'll get a few pelters for making this statement, but Paul Warne's starting to prove why he's got 3 promotions out of this division, Chris.
Oh, without a doubt. And it's plain to see that he does seem to tend to know the opposition far better than I expected, to be fair. And he does always have a good analysis on the opposition that he's about to play and has played. What I will say is that we highlighted at the previous podcast that we do believe that this league will be decided on the fate of all the results and not just ours. And exactly what you've just alluded to, Bolton again provided another shock and a failure when it comes to a result. And then Peterborough. Who would have thought that Peterborough would have crashed and burned at home? So this whole run-in is far from over. We fell short at Northampton. Our rivals have fallen short again. I think Barnsley are pretty much gone now. I don't see them challenging. I think it's now down to 3 out of 3 in challenging for the second spot between us, Bolton and Peterborough. I would love to say that Paul Warne has got enough in his locker to get these boys motivated, because this game on Tuesday is the most important game of the season, whether of games gone by and even games going forward. I really think that if we win this game on Tuesday at Fratton Park, which we'll come to, I think that will put us in a very, very strong position, especially with the fact that Portsmouth, like you said, have got some sticky wickets ahead of them.
Absolutely. And so without further ado, we've got an extended preview with Chris joined a Portsmouth podcast. You might have to help me with the name, Chris, because I've completely lost it on my notes, who it was. But you did sit down with a Portsmouth podcast earlier on this week before the Good Friday game. So obviously there's those points to add on to the conversation. But I've already listened to it because it's out on our YouTube channel, as we did it as a bit of a special. But we're going to tag the audio on for audio podcast listeners. We'll tag that into the podcast at this point now. But Chris, you did the interview. I'll let you introduce it.
Yeah, it was a great chat with Andrew Mitchellmore, who he does a podcast for Pompey News Now and also for the PO4 cast, and they are quite. They think that Derby will get a result at Fratton Park, and they're actually worried about us. They were relying heavily on injuries to be remaining injured, and as I allude to them in the conversation, which you'll hear, Paul Warne will always say one thing one week about injuries, and then lo and behold, they spray that magic dust that they find out of the locker. Or if you remember the infamous magic sponge that everyone used to have on a Sunday morning, Derby seem to have a magic sponge that changes a hamstring injury on Mendes Lang to just a bruising of the scar tissue, whatever that, you know, that sponge is incredible. And if they're available to buy on eBay, I think we should all go and buy one. But yep, fascinating insight. And I think you'll really enjoy the interview. Good evening and welcome to another edition of the Rams Review podcast. A special edition. We're going to review probably the biggest game of the season against Portsmouth, and none better than a guest to talk about the clash of the Titans and potentially the league title decider, other than Andrew Mittermore from the PO Forecast. Good evening, Andrew.
Good grief, you've suddenly made me nervous. Good evening. How are we doing, Chris? Clash of the Titans. That's put the fear into me a little bit. I've never thought that about a League One game before, but I suppose this season you're probably right.
Well, to be fair, I think we're the only two teams that get more than five people at the games because, let's be honest, League One has been, in some elements of what I've seen so far, park football at worst. It's been pretty awful. But hey, let's move on. We'll talk about
Chris, this. I mean, just saying, we came to it from opposite directions. We came up from League Two. You came down from the champ. I'm telling you, there is worse out there. Even if, you know, Burton brought 12 fans the other week on a Tuesday night, to be fair to them, they're a good 12. But trust me, it does get even worse as you go down the pyramid. So I'll caveat that straight away.
How bad was it in League Two while you're there? What were the challenges in that league?
When someone kicked the football out of the stadium, you had to wait a decent amount of time for another football to get found. That was less than ideal when we were having real financial problems sort of 10 or so years, just under 10 years ago. Honestly, the quality was low, obviously, and it's just such a difficult league to get out of. You can't play attractive football on a lot of those pitches because, you know, the quality of the pitches aren't great, to put it mildly, just because of financial constraints. And I mean, for the first couple of seasons in that league, we were playing with a lot of kids for various well-documented reasons. So we had sort of 8 16-year-olds and then 3 36-year-olds. And the 16-year-olds would just get out-muscled. It's such a different type of football, even to League One. It's visually very different to watch in terms of the physicality nature of it. It's a nightmare of a league. We were thrilled to get out. Probably we feel about League Two the same way you feel about League One, I would imagine. And we have started feeling it about League One as well, because we've been here now longer than we were in League Two for. So hopefully we'll both be gone in, what, a month's time? 27th of April's final game of the season. That's, what, 4 weeks tomorrow or something, so at the time of recording. So hopefully we're in the home stretch. That'd be nice, yeah. Wouldn't it? I'll take your handshake on that if you offer it now.
Well, we'll both shake the hands. And I think we should just ring the EFL now and say we've agreed that you can have Championship as long as we can have second and the rest.
I'd offer the same deal. I'll just split it with you. Have it 6 months each, the trophy in our museums and or wherever they would keep it. I don't even know where we would keep it, but yeah, 6 months each, split the title, split the prize money, both go up, bish bosh, see you Bolton. I'll take that.
I'll send Mr. Birchill WhatsApp and see what he says later. Just while we're talking about Portsmouth and before we get on to the nitty-gritty of the game ahead, what is your ownership status now? Because I remember in years gone by, the fan supporter group sort of took it over and rescued the club. And you've got some infamous fans and a fantastic heritage down there. And what is the status now of the club? Is it on safe shore, should we say?
Yeah, it's so stable, which is, again, I hope this doesn't come back to bite me. I can't see a universe in which it would. So yeah, the PST ended up being bought out, Portsmouth Supporters Trust, ended up being bought out by the Eisner family from the US. So the Eisners used to run, I want to say, Disney and ESPN. I think they were, Michael Eisner was the CEO of in decades gone past, and they've brought in a lot of stability. So we've not gone down that sort of Wrexham route of throwing money at things and doing it in a very American glitz and glamour way with Hollywood. Although we did have Will Ferrell at one of our games, which was a bit of an odd experience. He went into the changing room after the game, and I genuinely don't know how the players responded to that. It was an odd one, but I digressed. Yeah, so it's a lot more stable now. I think the Eisners have put a total of about, I think it was our club financial statement for the previous year came out, I think, yesterday, and the Eisners have now put about, I think it's 35 million or so into the club. And just little things like around Fratton Park, the away end, your fans will potentially notice is nicer than it was, I think, last time you visited, in terms of the general environment, in terms of the area behind the away end, in terms of the quality of the actual stand. It's improved. It's had a new lick of paint as well. And just the sustainability of the club is now there, because the PST is incredible. It still is. And the club literally would not exist without them. But in terms of fan ownership, there's unfortunately a realistic view that, you know, there's a bit of a ceiling to it. And the PSD stabilized everything as we needed them to. And I can't speak highly enough of them. And they're still doing excellent work, even though they don't, you know, actually run the club anymore. They're still doing excellent work alongside the club and being consulted and such like. And the Eisners have really come in, and rather than doing it as almost a hostile takeover where they do what they want, there is quite a lot of consultation. There's quite a lot of openness. We've got Rich Hughes in as a director of football who just does a fantastic job. The recruitment side of things has been good in the staff and the player side. Honestly, other than the academy side of things and not having an under 23 side, no real route from the academy up to the first team squad and quite a high culling rate. Other than that, I don't have a bad word to say about the organisation of the club now, irrelevant of whether we go up or not. We've got good people through the door in the staff, in the ownership, in the coaching. And I won't go on about it too long because I doubt Derby fans want to hear too much about the internal processes of management of game day experiences at Portsmouth Football Club. But yeah, we're on a safe footing now, and I would trust them not to overspend and put us in a position where that would be in jeopardy, which is, you know, after the 7-8 years we had, is I can't pay bigger praise to them, to be honest with you.
So I remember last year Portsmouth were probably the hardest team to beat in the league, and I think became the draw specialist, which isn't a bad thing when you have a coach take over and steady the ship. What's changed? Has there been money been put into the club that's allowed Messino to invest? I remember, I'm sure at the start, the first window, you signed as many as 14 or 15 players. I think you went a bit bonkers for a while. Or has it been his coaching? Or what was the general opinion of what's made Portsmouth from a team very difficult to beat to now a team that very rarely loses?
Yeah, it's a really good question, to be honest with you. And I probably don't have a nice, simple answer to put my finger on it. If I did, I'd probably work for the club in a more formal capacity. But I think in terms of the type of manager that the club has now got, John Messino, a complete unknown quantity when he came in, first full-time managerial gig. You know, we picked him up from Oxford United, where I think he was still a squad player, a centre-back when we picked him up. And, you know, we were talking about Chris Coleman and that type of thing as potential managers. And then we got blindsided completely by him coming in. But in terms of sort of the emotional approach to the game, he seems like a very happy medium between the two previous managers in Kenny Jackett and Danny Cowley. And that Kenny Jackett was very, you know, poker face. You felt like there was a big divide between him and the fan base and didn't show much emotion on the touchline. I think it was Norwich in the FA Cup. I watched it from New Zealand, so it must have been the end of 2018, maybe around Christmas, New Year. We beat Norwich in the FA Cup last minute, and it was on Kenny Jackett's birthday. And his press conference afterwards looked like someone had just stolen all of his pets. Like, he looked absolutely like just deadpan. And then we went a little bit too far the other way, I think, potentially. And I don't actually have anything bad at all to say about the Cowleys. They're really good blokes, like the best blokes. And I hope they succeed at Colchester. And I think the Pompey fan base was gutted it didn't work out with them at us. But they're very much sort of emotions on the sleeve, very arm around the shoulder. And that works for some type of player, but it sounds a cliche, but they lost the dressing room a bit, I think, because of the unerring positivity. And there were a couple of days where, you know, it was almost the Steve McLaren with an umbrella thing, where it had been hammering down with rain. We'd lost 2-0 away from home, and you just felt so sorry for him, trying to find positives, you know, looking soaked through on the touchline. Just, you know, give him a waterproof coat, for goodness sake. And Messino is sort of that middle ground of pragmatic, calm, not too high, not too low. Very, very good managerial style, speaks well. Tactically, has shown in a couple of games this season, he's very astute and picks up on things on the touchline, that some of which we pick up on from the stand, but we're higher up, so it's probably easier for us to pick up on certain positional things. But he picks up on things on the pitch and changes mid-half, doesn't wait for the next break in play, which we haven't always had. And then, I mean, the formation is very similar to what we played under Kenny Jackett, utilising wingers. Like, we had Jamal Lowe and Ronan Curtis as our wingers under Jackett. Jamal Lowe has gone to succeed in the Championship. So the system's not entirely different, but the quality of player is higher, having Bishop and Yenge playing, you know, at nine. And then Paddy Lane and Abu Kamara on the wings have just, they've exceeded all expectations, to be honest with you. And there's just a positive feel around the club. And I don't know how they've got the mentality there, but there were so many games early in the season when we scored late, as your fans well know that. But that wasn't a, it wasn't an anomaly for us. That was a point in the season where we were doing that regularly. It was something like 7 out of 10 games we scored in the last 10 minutes. And there's that sort of never say die. And, you know, you never write a game off. Even 2-0 at Reading in the first 20 minutes where we were all, no pun intended, we were thrown by the tennis ball protests. You didn't really think that game was over at 2-0 down, and we came back and won 3-2. And that was around the same time as we played you. And there's just this mentality where the players don't give in, they don't stop. And I don't know where it's come from, but it speaks volumes about what's going on behind the scenes in terms of having a good feel around the dressing room.
Do you find that complacency has come into the team yet? Do you think now that have they been playing in a style that they walk onto the pitch and they think that the buffer is enough to get them home? You know, certainly as a Derby fan, and you've seen some strange results that we've had, i.e. the Northampton one that being the last one. Have Pompey also had that? Because I remember that you had a bit of a blip sort of early winter where you were running away with the league. And I think then you sort of didn't win 1 in 4 or 5, and everyone was thinking as the bubble burst, how's the season gone?
Yeah, I mean, the Christmas New Year blip is just, you know, the sky is at the moment grey, grass is green, Pompey have a little meltdown at Christmas. That's just, it's what we do. It's kind of part of our USP, and it's kind of endearing once you get used to it for 50, well, I'm 32. Once I've got used to it for 25 years in a row, you learn to love it, but only with hindsight, not at the time. So yeah, the Christmas New Year blip, I don't think at any point it's been down to complacency, to be honest with you. There have been a couple of very weird results in terms of dropping points at, you know, Fleetwood, dropping points against Cheltenham. And I think the games where we have most dramatically dropped points, so the defeats at home against Blackpool, that was a 4-0 defeat, and the defeat at home against Leyton Orient, that from memory was a 3-0 defeat, both of those were just tactical issues. There wasn't complacency. There were large tactical issues on the pitch that weren't able to get solved during the game. So Blackpool, they targeted left-back position where we had Jack Sparks playing, who isn't great in the air. And then they just won every second ball on the knockdown and had a 2-on-1 versus our left-sided centre-back. Leyton Orient, they had Shaq Ford and Dan Adjei just sitting just in front of our back four and just creating space. They had people sitting in that little pocket between our two banks of four, and we couldn't cope with it. And both of those games, we were multiple goals down. To be fair, Blackpool, we conceded more later on after, I think it was a red card for Joe Morel in that game. But both of those games were just a bit of a, we had no momentum, and you could see from the first 15 minutes they were going to be a struggle. I wouldn't say that complacency has been an issue at any point. There have been times where it just hasn't worked out tactically. And yeah, the teams that sort of lower in the league that have taken points off us, Cheltenham had a bit of a random 3-minute spell where I think they scored twice in 3 minutes. I can't remember who it was, but yeah, I don't think it's been complacency, to be honest with you. It's a criticism that I wouldn't level at them. The season as a whole is, you know, I'm not going to complain about it. We're sitting top with 7 games to go. I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's been a monumental disaster, because that would be fairly insane. But there are always going to be ups and downs. 46 games is a long time, isn't it? And yeah, to have that blip over Christmas and we've still only lost 4 out of the 39 is just testament to what they've done outside of that little blip. And they've always bounced back from those results as well, where there has been a, you know, you think heads could go down, we could get onto a bit of an iffy run here and the teams could, you know, reel us in. There's been a reaction, whereas previously under Danny Cowley, when things started going downhill, they continued going downhill like a snowball, gathering speed and gathering gathering momentum. And that's just not happened as yet this season. Touch wood, it doesn't.
So looking at your last lineup against, well, the one I've picked out is the important game you had against Peterborough, where I think you sneaked a 1-0 win. And looking at your formation, it says here that you play a traditional 4-2-3-1. Is that the case at home as well, or is that purely an away tactic? It I see a couple of names in there that familiar. Marlon Pack for one. Does Messino tend to tinker between home and away visits, or is it normally a regular formation week in, week out?
It will generally be a 4-2-3-1. We have experimented a little bit with three at the back with limited success. I think the last time we really went with three at the back was trying to see out the game against Oxford, and we conceded an equaliser last minute. And the first half of that game, I think we played three at the back, and it was just probably the most boring half of football we've had this season. So, and we also don't have enough fit centre halves of a League One quality to really execute it. So if we're playing three at the back, then it means that in all likelihood, there's been an injury potentially in the Wickham game that we don't know about yet, or an injury on the training ground. So I'd very much expect this to be 4-2-3-1. We're a little bit limited injury-wise. I mean, I know you guys are as well. But Christian Sathie, who played in that game against Peterborough, he is likely to be... Well, he's out of the game against Wickham, so he's not playing Good Friday. Don't know if he's going to be back for the game against you. It was a mild hamstring issue, I think, he went off with. Cassini Yenge, who scored in that game against Peterborough, since that game, he's gone out and played internationals in Australia. So he's an Aussie who he scored his first international goal for Australia against Lebanon. So he's flown back. I'd be surprised if he starts against Wickham tomorrow at time of recording.
Yeah.
Purely because of the travel. Jet lag normally isn't that bad coming westbound from Oz. It's worse going over there. But I still, you know, it's a bloody long way, isn't it? So he might be a little bit tired, but we will start 4-2-3-1. In that Peterborough game, we had sort of Pierre Harris starting on the left. I'd imagine that Abu Kamara will start and Paddy Lane will start on the left. Lane missed that game because of illness. I think he had some sort of sickness or flu-y thing that's going around. So what I'd expect based off our injuries, if we don't pick up any more between now and then, is same four at the back possibly as we did against Peterborough. And then Hack and Moxon both playing centre defensive midfield. I would expect Lane and Kamara to be the wingers on the three. And the 10 is where we've got a bit of a question mark, where Sadie played in that Peterborough game. If Sadie isn't back, I'd potentially expect Pierre Harris to fill in there. However, Pierre Harris has been moved to 8 in a couple of games recently. There is the possibility that Bishop could drop into a 10 and Yenge could play up top, which is what we did in the last stages of that game against Peterborough. I don't know if he'll play them both from the start. I think that limits our impact sub options if Yenge and Bishop both start. It's been unusual for them to be on the pitch at the same time this year. We've played them with two up top together maybe twice all season. Once when we were drawing 1-1 against Bristol Rovers and we conceded late, but they did actually create opportunities. And then, yeah, once in this Peterborough game. I don't know if that answers your question. So I'd expect it to be fairly similar, assuming we don't pick up any more injuries between now and Tuesday.
Yeah, I think looking at Derby, we have an injury list. I think it's now into double figures. Or it depends. Like, we're having a conversation pre-recording based on, you know, what you hear in the press, and then all of a sudden Mendes Lang has had some magic tonic rubbed on his leg. And
yeah, he's gone full Lazarus, hasn't he?
Mendes Lang. Well, apparently he's gone from having a severe season-ending injury to some bruising on some former scar tissue. So who knows what to believe. So just quickly touching on, you were talking about your injury list yourself. Does that impact the starting 11 to the point where your bench is very weak and you're going to rely heavily on the first 11? Or do you think that if things aren't going quite right on Tuesday night, you've got enough off the bench to change formation, change strategy?
Yeah, that's a difficult question. It's good. I think the depth we have isn't where it was 6 months ago. I think our squad on paper, if everyone was fit, is night and day deeper than previous seasons. Having said that, we're a little bit light on the ground. Honestly, it's probably position dependent. In positions like right back, where we've got Zach Swanson and Joe Rafferty, both of them walk into most League One starting lineups in the right back position. So if one of those gets injured, obviously it's not, it wouldn't be ideal, but there is someone to come on who is just as capable in that position. On the wings, again, there's a decent amount of depth, probably not to the same quality, but Josh Martin, who's on the bench, who he hasn't really torn up any trees since he arrived. He's been sort of that solid, but not spectacular. He'd been training us with us for quite a long time before he got offered a contract this side of the new year. And Lee Evans has come in, who we've not really seen a huge amount of yet. He was at Ipswich previously. So on the wings, again, decent amount of depth there. Goalkeeper, Will Norris starting, who has just had a fantastic season. I think most clean sheets in the league. But then subs bench, you've got Matt Macey, who I think that's who you were referring to on our pod when you said you were impressed by our keeper last year. That's Matt Macey, who's come back and isn't even starting now.
Is that a six foot? Is it 6 foot five? Six foot six?
Yeah.
He's a giant, huge, isn't he?
Yeah, absolute giant. So in certain positions, yes, there's depth. Centre back, probably less so. We've got Shocknessy and Raggett playing there at the moment. Raggett's done fantastically to come in, and I'd say he's probably playing above the level that most people, myself included, gave him credit for, to be playing in a top of League One side and performing well. Riley Towler on the bench. I think he's got a good ceiling, but he's quite young and hasn't had a huge amount of minutes. And he's tended to come on late to try and defend a lead, and it hasn't always worked out well. So he's who came on against Oxford United when we were 2-1 up with 10 to go and we conceded 90th. So I wouldn't be as confident if one of our centre-backs picked up an injury. Gavin White, to be fair, can come on the wing as well, and he's growing in confidence. I'd say there's a slight step down for the most part, with the exception of if Yenge or Bishop are on the bench to come on as impact subs, or if Sadie's on the bench. I'd say, yeah, probably a slight step down on our wings and at centre-back, but sort of the spine of the team, that goalkeeper, centre midfielder up top, that it's not a step down. So yeah, probably quite position dependent. That's a very vague answer, I think I might have just given you there, but
no, I mean,
very position dependent.
It sounds very similar to the situation we're in as a team, as a squad. 5 months ago, five games ago, even Paul Warne saying we had the strongest bench he'd ever had, even as a manager. And now you look at the bench we had against Northampton, and we had some under-23s on there. And, you know, as you know, with the administration, we didn't have any under-23s in the building 2 years ago. So it sort of tells you that the level that we're there at, although I'm probably doing a disservice to Ben Ratcliffe, who is an up-and-coming talent. So just a final couple of questions before I wrap it up. Who's your player to watch, and who potentially do you think has got a mistake in them to sort of give your Achilles heel a good hit?
I mean, key players to watch. I think in terms of actually enjoying watching just outstanding football players, I think you'd have to look at Paddy Lane. It's genuinely been a privilege to watch him. And that sounds very fanboy-y, but the quality he's got and the improvement we've seen from him, I think when he came to us from Fleetwood, and one of those signings that, you know, it didn't get people too excited when he signed, you know, up and coming player, has potential, etc. But the fact that the level of improvement in his play in terms of his first touch and his finishing, I think when we played against you even earlier this season, he had a couple of chances and he was getting almost a bit of a reputation for being a little bit wasteful in front of goal, and sort of getting into good positions, but his first touch would let him down, or he'd, you know, miss a good opportunity. And honestly, I cannot describe to you the journey he's been on since then, in terms of his first touch, in terms of his game intelligence, and in terms of his finishing. I have no idea what's happened behind the scenes, but he's probably the one to watch in terms of just being an outstanding football player. Abu Kamara on the other wing, very 1 foot dominant, very reliant on his left. Having said that, very, very good on his left. So he has had games where he struggled to make impact. When he gets doubled up on and just shown onto his weaker foot, kind of gets negated, but that does create a space elsewhere, I suppose. Colby Bishop and Cassini Yenge are the obvious impact players. Bishop has probably contributed more to the build-up of goals than to actual goal scoring, which is silly considering he's our top goal scorer, but he's been involved sort of in secondary assists for so many of our goals. He'll have the ball played up to him, facing away from goal, use his strength to hold off a player and then set off an attack from either Kamara or Lane. And it's the sort of thing that Yenge does a bit further up the pitch, actually, in front of a back four. in terms of players with a mistake in them, if you can target Sparks in the air, if he plays, then that's what Blackpool did well. So sort of crossfield aerial balls to the left back position. If Sparks is lining up, beat him in the air and win the second ball. He's got a great delivery, really good going forward and has improved defensively, but aerially, you know, you can't be good at everything. Let's be honest. You can't be a master of all trades. And then I guess even though he's getting out of the habit, if you're asking for names, I'd probably put Sean Raggett in that bracket. He has raised his ceiling. He has had a really good season. But if you put pressure on him in a high press, he's probably the least, or the player I would be least happy having the ball at his feet when there is pressure put on him. The high press, putting pressure on Raggett and Norris, because we try and play out from the back and we'll quite happily play it across our back four inside our own box, is very, you know, start from very, very deep, invite the press and then play through it, which they're very good at doing. But if the high press is really well executed, there have been occasions when we get heart in mouth, squeaky bum time moments where, you know, it ends up with a panicky clearance or the ball does get skewed out for a throw in where particularly Norris and Raggett are put under pressure. Norris is actually really good with the ball at his feet and his distribution is excellent. But if you're looking to create chances, I'd say you're probably going to get it from turnover of possession high up the pitch after a well-executed high press. That would, if we do lose the game, I'd expect that to be where we lose it, or from just a random set piece.
It's interesting because Paul Warne loves, as you know, to play that kind of counter-offensive as such, in the sense of making a high press very difficult to break down. I think one thing that goes against Derby, in particular this game, is that I don't think we have the personnel to do it. Our legs are aging up top, as you know. And I think when you're going to play a high press, I think teams that become successful against you have got a very young forward line. We are in our 30s on most of them. If you take on the average age of the likes of Dwight Gale, who's injured, Waghorn, who's back, Collins, who's now back, Connor Washington, you know, you don't expect those kind of players to press against you. So I wouldn't be too concerned. So what do Pompey fear of Derby? Do you feel that there's any particular player that scares the living daylights out of you guys, or are you fairly confident that it doesn't matter what we bring, you'll have enough to beat it?
I mean, we very much don't take anyone for granted in this division. The player who, I mean, we've spoken about him on our pod already this afternoon, yeah, yourself and me, is definitely Corey Blackett-Taylor from his time at Charlton. I mean, we still have nightmares about some of his confrontations with Sean Raggett. So that's probably a duel you would want to really try and make the most out of in terms of, you know, identifying one-to-one battles on the pitch. If you can get Corey Blackett-Taylor running one-on-one at Sean Raggett, with Raggett sort of backtracking, that's somewhere that, you know, you could have potential success. Having said that, last time out when Blackett-Taylor played against us, against Raggett did do better. So, you know, maybe he'll have him, you know, in his back pocket this game, but that's definitely a nervy one-on-one confrontation for our side of things. I think Mendes Lang, again, if he is fit, who knows? I'm trying not to second guess it. I'm going to see who's on your team sheet. But Mendes Lang is a player of, you know, you can't argue that he is a quality player, and one of those that can just pull something quality out of thin air. Is Conor Hourihan fit at the moment?
He is, but he's an aging Conor Hourihan. I think if it's a roll up your sleeves kind of game, he'll go missing. He's been not great. He splits our fan base every week.
Okay. I mean, maybe I'm thinking about him in sort of whatever rose-tinted glasses, like you do about relationships from 10 years ago that weren't as good as you thought they were. But
yeah, when he was at Villa, when he was at Barnes, etc., then definitely you fear him. But he's not the player that he was. So and Max Bird's out as well, who's probably the better of the two anyway in the middle. So so
I mean, we're very grateful for Sonny Bradley. I mean, we think he's still being an ex-Pompey agent, to be honest with you. He's in our good books for getting himself suspended undercover, Sonny Bradley. So, yeah, shout out to him for that. We're very, very appreciative.
Again, again, a player that split the Derby fan base when he signed. We thought he was going to be the Messiah, take the captaincy and lead us to the promised land. And he's been probably the biggest disappointment that we've had this season. He came in, didn't get the captaincy. That was given to Conor Hourihan. I think that affected him mentally. And then, well, whatever he was thinking of, as you probably saw against Northampton last game out, has basically alienated him from probably everyone in the fan base at the moment. He's not a popular man, and he probably hasn't been seen doing his shopping in Derby City Centre recently. So just wrapping it up with a couple of minutes to go on the pod, how do you see the game going result-wise? Do you think that this will be a formality, or do you believe that this could be far more difficult than you
I'm
think?
Not falling for that trap. Absolutely not.
Mind games.
That's bait, and I'm not snapping, although I may have just nibbled a little bit there. Honestly, it sounds like a bit of a cop-out answer, but I think a lot of it depends on what happens on Good Friday, which we don't know yet, and your fans will know when they listen to this. If we pick up 3 points at Wickham, I think that a draw on Tuesday is a really decent result for us in terms of just sort of maintaining the gap, which is what we need to be doing. If we lose at Wickham, then it maybe moves the goalposts a little bit in terms of what we need to get from that game, particularly if Bolton pick up points on Good Friday and you guys do, which I do expect you to. So the way I think the game's going to go is, it sounds like you're going to, from what you've said to me this evening, sort of sit deep and then try and break quick. And it's whether or not we can create that moment of quality of playing the ball in someone like Yenge, just sitting in front of your back four, and then creating something in a split second, which, to be honest, they've done pretty well over the course of the season. I think it's going to be cagey. I think it's going to be nervous because it's such a huge game for both sides. And, you know, if, touch wood, if Pompey get 3 points from it and we beat Wickham, then suddenly, yeah, it's on, which is something that I've really tried not to say so far this season because it's such a long season. So I think it's going to be cagey. I'd imagine we'll probably have more of the possession then and probably pass it around the halfway line, trying to wait for the opportune moment to spot a gap in your defence or someone out of position, and then try and play the ball up to either Bishop or Sadie, have one of the wide players overlapping, cutting inside, one incisive ball splits your back four, far corner, easy, cheers for coming, have a safe trip home. That's the dream. I mean, let's face it, that's not what's happening, but that's the dream.
So, well, I think quickly on the Derby side of things, I think you'll see Paul Warne change things. He hasn't had the strongest of midfield, and I think he'll go quite physical. I think he'll go in with Smith and Adams. I think he'll try and shore things up. I'd be surprised if Hourihan starts. I don't think he will. I think he'll go for more of a nullify your attack and go for a smash and grab. So I'm going to predict, as I said on your podcast, I'm going to go for a 2-0 smash and grab. Are you sticking to your score prediction that you did on your cast?
I can barely remember what it was, Chris.
It was a draw, if I remember rightly.
Did I say a draw? Okay, if we beat Wickham, then I think 1-1 draw. And I think if it gets to a sort of the latter stages and it's 1-1 and we've beaten Wickham,
yep,
I think they'd be content to see it out and not take undue risks. If we lose against Wickham, I think there's more likely to be a result that isn't a draw in our game. So if we lose against Wickham, I'll obviously back us for a win because, you know, that's what people who do podcasts about their teams do. If we lose against Wickham, I'll go with a win by one clear goal. So either I'll go with a 2-1 because I think you've got enough quality going forward, particularly if Mendes Lang is back to score. If we beat Wickham, I think a 1-1 draw is a very possible and likely result. And I don't think we'd take any huge risks and open up any huge gaps at the back in the last 10 minutes trying to push for a winner.
Yeah. Well, I'd probably, if you've got his number, give Sean Raggett a WhatsApp and tell him that Blackett Taylor more than likely will be playing. So that'll be an interesting and duel ahead. So just the final question. It's been a great catching up with you. Who do you see succeeding in the battle for the top two, and who do you think will win the playoffs?
You're determined to get this little nibble of a soundbite that you can play back when we throw it away, aren't you? You're really going for it. I to put it crassly, as long as we go up, I don't care, Chris.
Yeah.
I don't care. I'm sick of this league. I'm over it. I'm done. I've done most of the grounds. You know, we've got this group chat where I've spoken to everyone for 7 years. I'm over it. In terms of who I think, I mean, looking at Ian Everett at Bolton, I mean, he looks tired and grumpy, and you just feel like that's got to sort of emanate its way into the changing room by osmosis somehow. They've also had a lot of games in a short space of time because of their fixture backlog. So I think if anyone's going to disappear backwards at all, I think it'll be Bolton. Peterborough and yourselves have got quite nice comparative run-ins after your game against us. You've got quite a nice run-in in the big picture compared to us. So my Pompey heart is saying, yeah, we'll be fine. We'll win the league. And then either yourself or Peterborough in second, and we'd have to go with yourself because you've got a 4-point advantage over them. If they win both of their games in hand, you've got a 1-point advantage. Oh no. Okay. I'm sticking with Pompey and Derby.
Okay.
I think Bolton will fall away, and I think Peterborough will win the playoffs.
Ah, interesting. So I sort of agree with you. I think Pompey win the league, as my prediction was at the start of the season. I said that on the local radio station and on the podcast. I think we will scrape home second. I don't think we'll scrape home because of our performances. I think the people will fall apart and we'll just scrape over. I think it'll be the lowest tally ever. Playoff-wise, I'm going to go for Lincoln. I think Lincoln are just crazy at the moment. And obviously, they brought these Irish lads in over from the Irish scene, and they now found the form and perhaps have gone into rehabilitation, got rid of all the Guinness that was in their veins and now playing some decent football. So
I rate that as a prediction. I like that. Predicting someone to win the playoffs who's currently not actually in the playoff positions.
Always
I'm a
way.
Big fan of that rogue prediction. I like that style. Nice.
Has to be. Andrew, it's been fantastic. It's been great having you company this evening. And hopefully, whatever happens, we'll see each other in the Championship. Fratton Park's always a great place to go to. You've always been very welcoming, and the atmosphere's always been incredible. So thanks very much, mate.
No, thank you. I mean, I don't think you're the row of fans that sort of adjoined the Pompey fans at Pride Park like this particularly much. I got called out by quite a large number of people who wanted to meet me behind the stand afterwards, apparently. But for the most part, we have a lovely time. So yeah, thanks for your time this evening. It's been great to chat.
No worries. They're just the local Scrabble club. They probably clearly thought you were intellectual and fans of the game of Scrabble. But Andrew, thank you very much. That's the latest edition of the Rams Review podcast. And Andrew, just a quick one. If they want to catch you up on your podcast about Pompey, where would they find you?
Yeah, so that's great. Yes, we've got a preview with you obviously coming out this weekend. So we are at PO4cast on Twitter, and we do it for at Pompey News Now on Twitter, Instagram, all of those places, you know, the regular Apple Pods, Spotify, the normal places. So yeah, come and have a listen.
Brilliant. Andrew, thank you very much for the time this evening. Good luck over the weekend. Do us a favour and beat Wickham, and then we'll take your 3 points. Cheers, Andrew.
Cheers.
So after that in-depth chat, as I say, we've sort of mingled it in with the Blackpool game because it's hard to isolate it sometimes when you come into this stage of the season. And Chris, again, I thank you for sorting that interview out with the guys down at the PO4cast. And it is an interesting chat to think that a team that have been the most consistent this season, that's quite clear. A team that I know you pointed out, because I have listened to it I think we've lost double the amount of games they have, which is quite astounding, really, to think that we're second in the league. They are a team that just don't lose. If they're not on, they have got a few draws in the locker, but they are a team that, you know, really, if you're going to win a title, you probably are only, even over 46, you know, maximum 6, 7, 8 losses. They're on what, 4? And as I say, a couple of them that they've lost, they lost to Blackpool, they lost to Leighton Orient, didn't they? Which was a bit of a shock result. So it's not as if, you know, they've even really been beaten by some of the top sides, if you can call them that, in the division. But one thing, as I say, from that chat that we look forward to now is there has been another round of games. Portsmouth winning 3-1, obviously Derby picking up the 1-0, Barnsley losing at home to Cambridge, Peterborough losing at home to Carlisle, Bolton obviously drawing 0-0 with Stevenage, some very peculiar results for me. And we say it year in, year out, Chris, the Easter weekend, bizarrely, seems to separate the wheat from the chaff sometimes. Obviously, Derby have got the benefit, and I think it is of a benefit, that they play a game after. They can see what Bolton and... I'll mention Peterborough and Barnsley, but I'm a bit with you. I think one of them has fell away from the race a little bit, and I think one's on the way. So it will mean that Derby know exactly what they need to do or what they can do to achieve what they need to achieve. There's been a couple of times this season where they've had that opportunity and they've not quite taken it. So we'll have to wait and see. But advantages of, I suppose, now playing secondary to all the other teams, in which, as I say, we got some strange results on Good Friday. They're more, if you can call them, they're more routine fixtures for our rivals, Chris, on Monday. So on Easter Monday. So I think as the table lies now, I would expect points to have been clawed back on Derby rather than that gap. Obviously Derby having the opportunity to extend that gap on Tuesday night. But five games to go. There was talk two, three games ago that Derby would have to probably win 6 out of 8. I was having a good chat on the supporters bus on the way home. I would argue now, if Derby can win 3 out of the last 5, I think that's probably enough, you know. What's your thoughts?
I agree. I think 3 out of 5 should be enough. Like I said, I think the goal difference come into it. I think a lot will be told on Monday. The games are 4 hours. Looking at them now, Peterborough are away at Orient. And Orient are a strange team. Like I said, on the day they can come up with a result and a half. Like they gave Portsmouth a right shoeing, if I remember. They beat Stevenage away, if I remember, a couple of weeks ago as well. Yeah, they got beat by a very, very informed Lincoln in the last minute, just gone, and to push Lincoln in the top six. So I think that was the interesting game. Barnsley, I agree with you. I think are gone. And they go to Burton tomorrow. They're away at Burton, and Burton, wow, if they ever need a result, that is one. But with it being only down the road for Barnsley, they'll probably take a full capacity away end. So Burton Albion fans, if anyone's listening, if you can actually get your lads to actually perform and get a result, tomorrow will be great. I also look at the Bolton game, which is quite interesting. They've got Reading at home, and I don't think Reading are out of the water yet by any stretch, as they're 6 clear of the relegation zone, and they have are in a bit of form at the moment. Reading, I think they've won the last two. Yeah, they have, just looking now. I think their last defeat was against us, wasn't it? They beat Cambridge and Northampton. So, you know, you hit the nail on the head, Jason. This league, week in, week out, springs up some crazy results. It's the most inconsistent league in the whole tier system of the Football League of England. You know, League Two can pretty much predict, and the outcomes are pretty obvious in League Two. This league's bonkers. But all we could do is concentrate on ourselves. I think if we do get a win tomorrow, which on Tuesday, which we'll discuss, yeah, I think 2 more wins, and we've got 2 home games to come out of those remaining fixtures. I don't see anyone else catching us.
There's obviously a couple of games to go before this date, and as we've just mentioned, the Easter bank holiday can certainly shake up. I think the one date that sticks out at this moment in time, Chris, is the 13th of April. Derby will entertain Leyton Orient at Pride Park, while Bolton face Peterborough on the same Saturday, in what, just 2 weeks' time. You never know. That could potentially seal automatic promotion if Bolton have a bit of a fall away. As I say, there's games to go yet, and we've got a very tricky trip to Adams Park in between that, and obviously we've got Fratton Park on Tuesday night. So the next two, both away from home. That's why I said on the pod last week I thought beating Blackpool was massive, because going into back-to-back away games especially with one of them being against the top of the league, is obviously never going to be easy, but it will test Derby's mettle. If they can navigate Tuesday and get something out of it, or do you know, at this stage, I want as many points as fast as I can so it doesn't go down to that last game of the season. Because, as we say, you know, you'd expect, well, or the last couple, Cambridge away, Carlisle at home, you've only got to look at the results on Friday, where both of those teams beat a team in the top six away from home. So it doesn't mean that, you know, oh, we've got Carlisle last game of the season, we're getting promoted. It's not that. So I want Derby to get as many points as they can as quickly as they can. But even if we put in a solid performance Tuesday night and, you know, and get beat, there's no shame in that for me. But then obviously you have to step it up against Wigan 8 days later than that, which I think is a crucial thing, that Derby obviously get those extra days rest. Obviously, Wigan will play that weekend, I believe, in the trophy final. So that might well help Derby as well. But yeah, I'm after navigating two very tricky away ties, I can't help but look at that Saturday, Chris, where, as I say, Derby, Leighton Orient at home, Bolton, Portsmouth. I don't know if we can mathematically secure automatic promotion on that day, but that could be another key point, as every single game between now and the end of the season is going to be. But when those two fixtures stand out, that could be a telling moment.
I don't think anyone can afford a draw, Jason. I think that's the problem that all the teams in the top five have. And I hold on to Barnsley very loosely in that, because obviously they're 10 behind us and their run is not great. I think anyone who takes a draw now, you might as well, I agree with you, you might as well play well at Portsmouth and go down fighting and take a defeat, but knowing that you're taking form into the next game, like you said, which is Wickham, knowing that you're playing well and lesser teams will succumb to your levels. So, you know, if Portsmouth is a defeat, but we win the remaining four after all, you know, certainly three of them, I wouldn't be too worried. Bolton ultimately have got to have two results better than us between now and the end of the season. And you look at their resume and what they've got left, you've got to ask yourself, Jason, do you really see Bolton getting two results better than us between now and then? And you go to Peterborough and you go to Barnsley, they've got to get four results in theory better than us. So, you know, when you look at it in that sense of the word, you actually get more and more confident, thinking that actually the job is nearly done. But this is, it comes back down to complacency again. You know, I don't want Derby County going to Portsmouth with the attitude of not losing. All right, then some people say, well, a point's great, but if the performance is poor and we come away with a 0-0, some people will take that as a bonus. I'll actually take that as a bit of a concern, because I just want to see a good performance. And like you said at the start of the pod, the Portsmouth pitch and the Portsmouth style of football will suit us. It was very interesting on the podcast that they talk about their consistency, and you were the same, that, but they are fallible and they do have weaknesses. And they said on the pod that they absolutely are petrified of Corey Blackett-Taylor. And that's one person we haven't really spoke about in the pod, who made it, you know, who made his return back to the team. And also Fornar, some bloke called Fornar appeared from absolutely nowhere, which I didn't even know he was still in the building, but apparently he's had a back problem. They fear Blackett-Taylor. They said that when they played against Charlton previous occasions, he's absolutely tore their back four at a good one. So if he takes that form in and takes a lot of pressure off Mendes Lang, I think we could be pleasantly surprised. And it could be the big, like I said, I think it will be the, I think if we come away from Portsmouth with a win, I think the deflation of the other teams, especially after results possibly go with us on Monday, I think that could be a big turning point.
Yeah, no, I would completely agree. It could really go, it really could boost Derby's end of season, because, yeah, I wouldn't want it to get squeaky bum time with this Derby side, because they've shown great character in some games and they've also capitulated in places in others. I think the port that we sort of touched on it a minute ago about the Portsmouth game now, how do you treat it? Do you rest Mendes Lang? Do you not play? Do you not risk Collins? Do you not, one or two of these, and just accept that you might well get beat? But as I say, from the noise coming out from the post-game press conferences from both manager and obviously Adams, who was put up for media, they still think they can win this league, Chris. And to be honest with you, I would agree. I think they can. I'm not so confident that they will, but there's obviously mathematically they can, especially when you've still got to play Portsmouth. But it's what way do you go Tuesday night? Do you rest and back yourselves over the final four to do enough, which I think Derby can do? Or do you go hell for leather with a couple of players who, as I say, have been injury doubts, risk them on Tuesday, and, if they then pull up, we haven't got them for the final four, especially if we then get beat by Portsmouth, then it throws up a completely other conversation. Appreciate that's obviously why we're not coaches and anymore, and management and things like that. But it feels a bit of a you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't for Paul Warne on Tuesday, which is a strange way of looking at it. But I think if you go strong, okay, if we go, there's three or four different scenarios. If we go strong and we win it, that's one thing. But then the other variables, they can all have a bit of a detrimental effect on the run into the end of the season, Chris. And I must admit, I'm just not sure which way I would go with this. I'm actually probably leaning towards the side of probably resting one or two of them, I really am. And what will be Tuesday night, because I think we've got ourselves into a position where it's not the be all and end all. Okay, if we're still thinking of going for the title, then it is. Which would be a fantastic occasion, but at the end, if we was to win it, but there's still a lot to go right. You're expecting a team who's only lost four games all season to probably lose what, three of the last five, two of the last five, at least. I'd be surprised if Portsmouth did that. Obviously, one other thing that Portsmouth probably haven't had recently, and I know you mentioned it in the chat, after their January wobble, their form's been pretty strong. I don't think anybody's, in a few weeks, nobody's beaten Portsmouth. So we just don't know how they would react, especially to the team who are in second and breathing down their necks. That could be another game changer. So it's not just a fixture on the South Coast and just one to get past, Chris. There are quite a few different variables, and I have to say, I'm glad I'm not having to pick the team and making plans for Tuesday night. I'm not sure which way I would go. As I say, I'm leaning to maybe towards resting somebody, but I dare say at what 8 o'clock kickoff on Tuesday night, when I tune in to watch it, and I don't see four players on the team sheet, I'll be screaming and venting my anger on Twitter.
Yeah, it's Bob. I'm with you. I'd rest them if it was me. I personally think that resting Mendes Lang and giving him, like I said, 8 additional days to recover and have a fully fit Mendes Lang against the likes of Wickham, Carlisle, Orient, and I can't remember the
Cambridge,
the other game that with Cambridge. That lesser teams, you'd rip them apart, let's be honest. I think I would personally rest him. I think if they're petrified of Blackett Taylor, then let Blackett Taylor do his worst and keep them guessing. I would probably rest Collins, and I would probably put Waghorn. I think Horihan would. You've got an argument. You've got a bench strong enough to rotate. Like Waghorn was on the bench, Collins was on the bench, Thompson was on the bench, Fournier was on the bench. There is an argument to rest some of your weary warriors and save them to the run-in. And I think he'll do that. I don't think we've got anyone else available to come back in. Elder, I noticed, wasn't in the squad. Is he? I don't know. If, I don't know if there was an injury to him or whether it was selection.
Yeah, not heard anything about him.
So, yeah, my only worry against Portsmouth is, you know, we've got Sibley and Wilson in a back four, and against Blackpool they got away with it. I'm not sure how much they'll get away with against Portsmouth. Is my only fear. But yeah, I would probably look to rest your key elements. Mendes Lang, definitely. I didn't think Mendes Lang was right from the start. He did a couple of good moments against Blackpool, but he certainly didn't look as sharp as he did pre scar tissue injury, should we call it. And it's all brilliant for a player to turn around and tell his boss that he wants to play. But that's where Paul Warne earns his money, to turn around and go, you know, Nathaniel, stay at home. We don't need to go down to Portsmouth. We've got Blackett Taylor. You've got Joe Ward. It's such a shame we haven't got Barkhouse. That's one thing I will say. If Barkhouse was fit, you could rest Mendes Lang without a shadow of a doubt. But it does allow Barkhouse another 2 weeks to get back. And, you know, he could be, you know, Collins, I wouldn't play at Portsmouth personally. You know, if he's not fit enough to play against Blackpool, I don't see these, although he did look good when he came on. If he's not, you know, he's not going to change, his fitness isn't going to go up 25% between now and Tuesday. So there's an argument that you play Waghorn up top. Washington's an interesting one for me, because I thought he should have buried his chance, to be honest, when he were through. I thought he took his finish too obvious. He shaped himself to place it where he was going to place it quite early, and the keeper didn't have to do a lot. But yeah, I'm with you, Jason. Rest them. And also, I don't think Pompey would expect that either. I think if they turn up with a plan in their head that Mendes Lang is going to play and Collins is going to play, and then all of a sudden the cheat sheet comes out and neither of them are there, it makes them think, what are Derby up to? And more, I'm all for that. You know, let them guess till the end.
Yeah, I think for the sheer fact of I'm not thinking about winning the league, I'm thinking of just getting up. I think they'd be better suited to have those more available for the final four than obviously winning Tuesday and then losing to Wickham and not beating Leighton Orient or something like that. I think it's a big. It's going to be an interesting choice. As I say, we get to see most other teams see what they do Monday. That might change his thinking. We just don't know that if Bolton were to lose again, that may well not win again, that may well change his thought process again. But it will be another interesting. It's great to have these conversations, though. You know. We've talked about too much dross over the last couple of years. So even though it's not fantastic, it's nice to be in a promotion push. And we'll see where that goes. So final five on Portsmouth then. As I say, we have covered the majority of it. as I say, Chris, I've listened to the preview that you've done. And they, as I said a minute ago, they might feel a little fragile against certain teams. And I remember the conversation where in the games that they sort of have been beat, especially the Leighton Orient and the Blackpool one, there's specific tactics that won them, that lost them those games, that the opposition managed to find. And we know that Paul Warne has probably got that in his locker. As we say, team selection wise, we'll wait and see. But I do think, what I'm about to say is a bit. I'm going to probably contradict myself in the same sentence. I was worried when we played Bolton off the back of their midweek where they scored five or six in that game, because I know Derby's back line is a little inconsistent at times. They just seem to have a lapse of concentration. They didn't really do it against Bolton. They did it against Northampton, which ultimately lost them the game. They did it once or twice against Blackpool without being punished. Portsmouth's forward line is clearly, and Colby Bishop clearly is the best forward line probably in the division. I wouldn't expect, if Derby were to make similar lapses in concentration that they wouldn't get punished against Portsmouth, especially at Fratton Park, where I know you say, and I have to agree, even though it is with obviously a bias that we've got some of the best fans going. We know Portsmouth have got some good fans. We know their fan base is strong. We know the atmosphere. This is why I hate the fact that it's been moved to Tuesday night. It's great that it's on TV. It allows more people to watch it because obviously a long bloody way to go, especially as it was on Bank Holiday Monday, even harder now on a Tuesday night for some. So it allows other fans to watch it. But it was that kind of game, that sort of atmosphere. It would have been a real spectacle for Monday. So I am a little bit disappointed that it's not. But then, as I say, I then hark back to going, well, you go into the game knowing what you can and can't do. And if Bolton do drop points again, as I say, Barnsley drop points again, Peterborough drop points again, going there, shutting up shop and getting a nil-nil, whilst we said earlier we should go for it, and I do agree with you, I think you're better off going for it and losing. Maybe, horses for courses, another point, it's another job ticked off. Because, as I say, whilst it'd be a fantastic atmosphere, and I expect Derby to win the game if it went down to Carlisle, the final game of the season, if we can give ourselves a little bit of breathing room towards the end, Chris, I'm all for that. So Monday might have a bit more say in what we've just said. And as I say, the contradiction side of it is that I don't see Derby keeping a clean sheet against Portsmouth, which means we are going to have to score to get anything out of the game. But we are talking about one of, if not the best defence in the division. But of course, Portsmouth's got one of the, if not the best defensive records in the division as well. In fact, I think theirs is better than ours, just. And so it's a hard one to, with everything that we've just said, to round it off, it's a very difficult one to call which way we go, how we attack that game. I mean, obviously, Paul, he said it many, many, many times. He doesn't look to play for draws. He doesn't look to do that. He looks to attack from the off. I think it's fair to say we've seen on many a previous occasion this season where we could probably challenge that and go, well, he didn't play like that, but that's what he says. They set out to win every game. I'm not nervous about Tuesday night, which I think is a good thing. And I don't think the players should be going into it nervous, because in all honesty, I don't think, even though they might think so in the camp, I don't think we're expected to catch them, Chris. I don't think we are. And so there's more pressure on Portsmouth, which actually could play into Derby's hands. And then, unfortunately, that will probably then switch the pressure, because I'm just not sure at the moment. If we'd been playing fluid football and things like that this season, different conversation. But having one eye, having Portsmouth actually beat us Tuesday and that basically knocking us out of winning it, I would imagine we can then solely focus on finishing second. I'm not sure how well Derby will deal with looking at in front of them and behind for the remaining four.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that I just don't see a draw happening Tuesday. I just don't. And I know I said 10 minutes ago that a point wouldn't really benefit us. I don't think it will. I think, yeah, it would give us a 4-point margin on Bolton potentially if they win their games, and I think we've got that with the goal difference anyway. So I don't think that'll be neither here or there. I think the only difference might make Bolton reassess what they have to do to finish the season. Look, at the end of the day, Jason, the stats tell us that this shouldn't be a draw. I think if we'd have asked this question last year or last season, I'd have said draw all over, because Portsmouth, sorry, didn't do anything other than draw, didn't they? They were the draw specialists. This year, they've lost four times for a reason. And the reason they've only lost four times is because they're very good at the back and they're very, very consistent. They did highlight in the preview that we did that they thought Sparks was their weak link, and he didn't play against Wickham yesterday. They dropped him to the bench. He didn't come on, which tells me that they are looking at the Derby game very important, because Blackett Taylor ripped him and Sprague apart. Now, Sprague has got better, apparently, since those infamous days against Blackett Taylor and Charlton. So who knows? And also, we don't know what injuries Portsmouth came out with from Wickham. I haven't listened to their post-match, so I don't know if John Messino has sort of assessed his team already and told the press what he hasn't got available. So all we can do, mate, is sit there on Tuesday with a popcorn and a couple of beers. Unfortunately, I can't get down there to Portsmouth. The tickets are like gold dust. So, and like I said, for the fans that were going down there on a Tuesday night, nothing short of incredible. You know, that's a 5-hour journey at that time of the day and then a 5-hour journey back. So some of our guys aren't going to get home till 3 and 4 in the morning, some probably even longer. So let's hope that the result, whatever happens, is a positive one for them, or certainly the performance gives them confidence coming back on that long journey.
Yeah, I think it's we are at that now. And as I say, if we can get something from it, that's only going to benefit us. It's changing the bank towards the end of the season. And that can only benefit. We end the pod with saying sort of the same thing. There is bound to be more twists and turns between now and the end, but that end's getting closer and closer in sight, Chris. And I'm not going to stick my neck out just yet and say that Derby are surefire for it, but the opposition, they're running out of games, aren't they? So, you know, Derby, they're in pole position. All they've got to do is, as I mentioned, I think 3 wins out of 5 would be more than enough, especially with the other games that other teams have got. For any of those around us to win 5 out of 5 would be near on a bloody miracle, if I'm honest, with the fixtures that they've got as well. So maybe we do have 1 foot in the Championship, but not gonna count me chickens too much. And as you say, we'll see how Monday goes. Hopefully that puts us in a better position. And yeah, I'll watch on with bated breath on Tuesday night. As you said, I would echo anybody that's going down there, enjoy it and hopefully bring something back. That'd be great. And then we tackle the final four with just 4 weeks of the season left. Still plenty of football to be played. Nothing can be won or lost Tuesday night, really, but we are getting towards that key time, and be interesting to see again how a couple of other teams respond. Chris, for me, we mentioned about Bolton. Obviously, they'd not played after us. They'd not played that game, and then they bounced back on Friday with a 0-0 draw. So obviously, that's back to back poor results for them from their perspective. So be interesting to see how they back up what's been a bit of a rough couple of weeks for them. And then yeah, fingers crossed. After Tuesday, with 4 to go, Derby have still got a nice little comfort blanket. And we'll then look ahead to the next podcast, which obviously will have all the fallout from Portsmouth. We will talk Derby Forest Women, which is going on as we speak. Jack is at the game at the moment, so we'll have a nice preview with a nice review of that one. And then, of course, we'll look ahead to that trip to Adams Park in, 10 days' time. That's all for this week, Chris. Absolute pleasure, mate. Appreciate you joining me on Easter Sunday. Thank you very much, and I'll see you next time.
And you, Jason, it was a great show, mate. It was a great show.
Yeah, no, it's nice to just have two. You get to have a right good chinwag. So no, that's been great. But we've been the Rams Review, and until next time, as always, up the Rams.
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of the Rams Review podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to get in touch, we're on Twitter at RamsReview1. Our Facebook is Rams Review Podcast. Or you can drop us an email, ramsreview@hotmail.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, up the Rams.